Our next intelligence analysis is from a talk by the chairman of Wells Fargo, Richard Kovacevich, on the 13th of March, 2009, to a gathering of business and academic leaders at Stanford University, where Mr. Kovacevich said that the current financial crisis was caused by financial institutions themselves, not by their customers.
For this evening's talk, the direction I received from George Shultz and John Chauvin was very clear and very blunt. Even a banker could understand it. They said, please explain what in the hell happened, why did it, and how might we avoid it happening again? So that's pretty straightforward. So I'll get right into it.
Good Lord have mercy. Now listen to that. Now listen to that dialogue. Now listen. Now we've been pretty clear about degrees of separation. And they're laying out how it's separated, how it's disconnected. Now he's going to tell us how it didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, hell, if you don't know how it didn't work, how in the world are you ever going to get to a place that did work?
Yeah, but the others don't know how it worked. They asked him what happened. They assumed they didn't understand it. And so he's going to tell us why it didn't work. There's no point here yet that he's saying he didn't know why it worked or didn't work.
Okay.
I don't know why you're saying that. You're jumping
ahead. What the hell happened? How did it happen?
Oh, the 6 degrees. Okay, I see your point. The 6 degrees of separation he's bringing. Well, okay. How would you answer the question about what happened? You wouldn't answer the question.
Wouldn't ask that question.
So you got that, Ed? Ian's not going to engage in anybody who talks. Because if you talk,
there you go.
And that's what you're accusing. That's what you're accusing, Bob, of those that come into their place of power. That's what you're accusing them. You're saying they won't tell you anything. If they figure it out, they won't tell you how, because they won't be listening to you saying, well, how did you do this? And when did you figure it out? And what does that power feel like? And why did you feel like you needed to take somebody else's trash to the dumpster and able to get a chicken so you could go in the bullion business? And how long did you find yourself in a less than place? And what kind of contrast did you have to get into to decide that if you didn't come into your place of power, that you was going to wither up and die? Yeah. And why did it take so long for you to get so lean for you to figure out that there was something else going on here than your meager, limited, vast degrees of separation that you felt you must have come out of your mouth consistently all day, every day, of why you weren't going to have a job and how you were going to starve to death and how you couldn't pay your electricity bill for that you couldn't use and why you couldn't make your car payments on a car that you owned that you didn't pay for and why you bought that car in the first place and how you got, we'd be real interested to hear how this goes. Fasten your seatbelts. Thank you, patience, for all you kind listeners that are going to thoroughly enjoy this one.
Well, they are enjoying listening someone express this.
Oh, good.
And fast is half their joy, I assume. Or unless they were forced to be.
Oh, okay. So maybe when they hear this description of this what's going on, they'll see how stupid it is and make them feel better about their place of stupidness. Okay, good. That's good. Good.
Okay, so underneath it says, financial institutions exhibited a total disregard for basic risk management fundamentals and even common sense. I'm assuming this is something.
Well, is that stupid? Oh, then we must be on to something.
It was fueled by greed, lapses in ethical behavior, and was unchecked by the ratings agencies, he told a gathering of business and academic leaders at the day-long program organized by the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research. Well, in other words, he used moral value judgments to judge something that was caused by the chip technology. So
they haven't passed a law to legislate morality yet, but it's a coming. Don't worry. We can get some reform. It'll be all right.
There's lots of reform coming as a big, mistaken, knee-jerk response to keep the international banksters screwing us. The banksters are behind reform.
Well, it's better than the banksters than the aliens directly probing you, so it's all right. So we suggest that with all this free time that all these human creators that are going to have these degrees of separation, we suggest that you get a very sturdy lubricant so it'll help your pain of your rectal intercourse and it's on your way. Oh, wait, that's already been solved. You've about got a Gulf of Mexico full of lubricant. So, hey, it's not a problem. Just go get you a great big old barrel full of it.
Okay, I'd like you to just listen to a little bit of this.
Yes, we will. We've been blowing, but we'll stay with you.
I mean, it is a cop-out. He's just going to use value judgment and pretend that he wasn't doing any of this, that the others were doing it.
Well, then let's get, before you play that a little bit, then let's talk about Wells Fargo interaction with Fifth Third National Bank.
You would know about that. Tell us about Wells Fargo. Okay, go ahead. Oh, is that all you're going to say?
There's more, but...
Yeah, tell us a few more details. That got it all worked up.
The interaction of why Wells Fargo and what happened to the shares of Compass Bank and how Compass Bank, and that's Halliburton, by the by, and how Wells Fargo was supposed to come in and take over and become the next big wash. The only reason they got Wachovia is because Wachovia went insolvent. And they bought it for 11 cents a share. So they robbed those faithful shareholders. That's the media companies that took the shares of stock so they could sit on the board to run the bank down in the tube so that they could control it and give them a loan. Right? Right, Bob?
Right.
That stock that they got in exchange for the power and control to run the loan business for the media corporation so that could work was sold for 11 cents a share. If it goes below $10 a share, then you're in a position of insolvency because your Regulation D that you file for state charters for national affiliate status is already breached. For it to be sold for 11 cents a share was nothing other than a pawning, a liability, because you had depositors that were going to have to be covered by the FDIC that's bankrupt because you got individual claims that would have bankrupted the FDIC insurance already anyway. And the little woman got up in front of the Senate subcommittee and said, we need to move it to $500 billion to even cover the Social Security checks when they bounce. What?
Right.
Did somebody say Social Security checks are going to bounce? Easy there, Trigger. They ran out of money 2 months ago.
Okay, veer it back to Wells Fargo. That was good. So so Mr. Kovacevic did that. He screwed Compass Bank and Wachovia.
Wachovia, he didn't screw Wachovia. He took on the biggest problem it's ever been. The issue is that Wachovia is still on the hook to their depositors. See, people put money in the bank and they see it as an asset. The banker doesn't. It's a liability. He's got to be culpably responsible for that deposit. And if he ain't got it, he's out.
Okay, let's get to Mr. Kovacevic. Are you saying So you're saying he was fueled by greed?
No. Bob, the chicken was dead. He just picked up a dead chicken and was going to make a little bit of bouillon out of it. The chicken was not alive. It was a dead chicken. Dead. Gone.
And he made bouillon out of a dead chicken.
Trying to. And he's going to be the biggest dead chicken producer. Only behind BAFA, Bank of America. Only behind BAFA, who's got roadkill as well.
So you're saying Mr. Kovacevic was answered George Shultz, you know, former Secretary of State under Nixon or some way back there. LaRouche thinks Mr. George Shultz is the boogeyman behind everything of the last 25 years. Anyways, here's Shultz asking Kovacevic what happened. And Kovacevic, you said, has, if he had any good advice to get out of the situation, you're saying right now has not followed it and got himself in a real problem.
Well, he damn sure wouldn't have picked up a dead chicken for 11 cents a share.
And did he do that?
He bought Wachovia. They merged. That's the point. That's why he's now the new authority that you're listening to to tell you how he's going to straighten it all out because somebody made him take a dead chicken. And the Federal Reserve had a great deal to do with it because everybody that had an account at Wachovia had a Federal Reserve account.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the routing numbers on the first part of your checks that identifies that particular bank? The reason they put that on there so it can be identified through the Federal Reserve system. Dun, dun, dun. So if that goes down, it comes back to the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve, they're just the clearinghouse. They're just the central bank. They can't be culpably responsible for those deposits, and they can't be watching over what Wachovia, that's what we always call it, Wachovia was doing. Nobody was watching over Wachovia. And so now, Wells Fargo, that's the Pony Express people, they going to take what Wachovia couldn't watch over, and they going to marry it with theirs, so they'll have more. So now they're an authority with how to control the power with that which those real smart people at Wachovia, oh, but that really doesn't matter because it's all about the Federal Reserve. That's what your earlier caller, would listener, speaker, rander, babbler, wibbly-wob. It was a joy scene. Bob, are y'all playing tricks non-physical? Was that really James Joyce talking? Was there
you
a
caught
way?
Us. Well, you caught
okay,
us.
Yes. We knew, hey, they's awake. They just waiting to decide who's going to be in the who's going to be in the coffin. That's what they're waiting on to see. So
yeah.
Now, let's hear how the dead chicken picker is going to handle what happened. Is he going to tell us how the chicken died or how he came into possession of the dead chicken?
Yeah, how the milk got out of the coconut or into the coconut.
Well, or how it soured in the coconut is what he's trying to tell you.
Well, okay, this is July 10th.
March 13th.
Is Mr. Kovacevich still chairman of Wells Fargo today, Ion?
Yes.
Yeah.
He is. How is he doing this weekend?
Are you kidding? He's put in his resignation. He's thought about suicide. They won't let him out of his stock option. The golden parachute's open. He's got the golden parachute. And guess what they offered to pay him? Wachovia stock. So he's pretty much in it now for the long haul, Bob. See, he was trying to get to be unemployed and to get over this and to have all these degrees of separation so he could be like everybody else, trying to find some way to pay somebody else to take his trash to the dump. But since what happened, it got so bad. And he got so discombobulated in this position of explaining how we went, that we had this race to the bottom. What he's describing is a race to the bottom. We've really got to give it our all so we can hit the bottom first. We've really got to get there. But now BP's trying to do that too, but they're racing to the bottom for a different reason. So these millions and millions and millions of barrels that was only thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons in the earlier days, which is turned in and is like covering everywhere. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe they won't believe that there was only 20,000 gallons of oil in all of the Gulf of Mexico and it's covering beaches and running all over the place. They listen to your cash flow long enough, they thought, whoops. That crazy non-physical is on to us again. They knew something was up when they had more than 20,000 gallons sitting in the trash cans of this oil cleanup that they're cleaning up the beaches and throwing it in the trash cans right there by the beaches, and they're all just slipping right through them sacks, and they put them in the trucks and it running up down the roads, dripping in onto the asphalt. But that's good because there's a lot of stuff in there. Now, wait, that has nothing to do with dead chicken. Oh, wait. Yeah, let's get it back to where. Let's get to the, back to the degrees of separation that we're working with now.
Yeah, right. I wanted to say, Ed, if, imagine if Mr. Kovacevich, we sent him a copy of this. He got it Monday morning. He's sitting in his office. He's listening to this guy. He's listening to Ion speak. And you could just see him after a while. Pretty interesting. Who is this guy? oh, he's not physical. And you go, what? What do you mean he's not physical? He ain't here. He's, well, come on. Is this a joke? He'd say, can you imagine? So he's getting not physical on the line.
Yeah, maybe they could tie you off, Bob, with some of that extra watch over your stock.
This is great, Ed. This is a very good surprising development in the show. We actually have a Howard Stern takedown of some celebrity in the banking world.
Well, I'm looking on Wikipedia, and it says that actually Mr. Kovacevic is the retired chairman of the board of directors and previous CEO of Wells Fargo.
When did he step down?
Doesn't give the date. But the talk that you're listening to at Stanford was in March 2009. So at that point, he was still with Wells Fargo. And, you know, he has an MS in industrial engineering.
He has a degree in that, did you say?
A master's of science. But then he went back and got a master's of business administration from Stanford.
Well, what Ion described the state of mind he was in a few months ago before he stepped down, because Ion said he considered suicide. He wanted to step down, they wouldn't let him. So I guess he finally, Ion, does Ed bring you up to date? Can you get a stronger beam? He's actually, can you see that he stepped down?
Yeah, I guess he got shit of his watch over his stock.
He was told by his team when he was at Citibank that Citibank had a 30% market share but was losing $108 million a year.
And that's when he was in charge.
Yes.
So how is Wells Fargo doing?
That's
well,
a big business. That's a big business if you can have 30% of the entire market and only lose $108 million a year. Boy, we're going to have to get more customers if this equation's going to work out. Maybe Citibank should issue state-backed debt-free debt. Yeah. Isn't that sort of what you got? We've got a big business. We've got a big market share. It starts to sound like some of your internet.bombs. We got a whole bunch of customers. Nobody's buying anything. No money's changing hands. We're really going after the market share. We'll make the money up on the stock options.
Oh. Or we could double our market share and double the amount of money we're losing a year.
Exactly.
Okay, let's...
I like this financial business. This is a great business.
Well, oh, no, you only said the dynamics of it. The unemployed certainly would find gainful employment. All they'd have to do is get a great business that lost a whole bunch of money. And if they, long as they lost a whole bunch of money, they could be the CEO of a great big corporation. Then they wouldn't be unemployed. They'd have a retirement. They'd have a working job. They wouldn't have any troubles or problems or cares. So, Bob, you just answered it. How do you come into your power? If you're screwed, then get dead chickens and boil them and make dead chicken bouillon. Because even if you take a live chicken and you boil it, it's a dead chicken sooner or later anyway. So as long as it'll reek bouillon, then you'll be in the bouillon business. Well, Mr. Long, what is your business? Oh, I'm in the bouillon business. I trade bouillon. Oh, you in bouillon. Oh, we hear that just gone through the top. You can't believe how the market has moved since I went into bouillon. It is amazing. Now, I don't partake of the stuff myself, but it has been very, very good to me, this bouillon business.
Okay, we probably won't listen this much, but let's just see
okay,
what the moral is.
He retired early this year, 2010, after 23 years with Wells Fargo.
And do they, well, he was at Citibank a long time ago then. Okay, and how old is he?
Born in 1943.
Okay, here we go.
Let me read you a very interesting quote. And while I read this, think about who it's from. Quote, owners of capital will stimulate the working class to buy more and more expensive goods, houses, and technology, pushing them to take more and more expensive credit until their debt becomes unbearable. The unpaid debt will lead to bankruptcy of the banks, which will be nationalized. The state will then have to step in to save the banks, which will eventually lead to communism. Who said that? Karl Marx in 1867. Pretty scary, isn't it? With that good news, I'll go forward. This is the sixth economic recession that I have experienced in my business career. The worst one so far was back in the early 1980s. I know some of you remember it. We had the Arab oil embargo, 14% inflation, 20% interest rates, 11% unemployment, and a very, very restrictive monetary policy. The vast majority of savings banks failed, as well as many commercial banks, especially in Texas. The Continental Bank in Chicago failed, which at that time was the largest bank failure in U.S. history. It was actually nationalized and sold 7 years later. Banks were saddled with LDC debt that needed to be restructured, especially in Latin America. By the way, if banks had to mark-to-market their LDC debt back then, as we do now with so many assets, every money center bank would have been bankrupt with practically no access to additional capital. Now, although the economy has still not hit bottom by any means today, today we have 8.1% unemployment, record low interest rates, low core inflation, and the most expansive monetary and fiscal policy in the history of the United States. In stark contrast, the inflation was so high during the 1980 recession, the Federal Reserve mandated that banks reduce their lending, not increase it like they are demanding today, in order to slow the inflationary economy. Banks face fines and other sanctions if loans outstandings increased. Banks totally cut off their lines of credit to their customers. In spite of such dramatic differences, most everyone thinks this is the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Why is that? I would call it the worst financial crisis, perhaps, since the Depression, but I believe the 1980s was economically much worse than this one, at least so far.
Oh, Bob. Okay, you don't agree with that?
Bob, listen to what he's saying. You're worse, much worse off. You're much worse off in the 80s than you are now. Because people were forced to get their independent, individual margarita machine so they could have soft-serve alcoholic beverages in their home 24/7 at a moment's touch. And the individual consumers were forced to increase their spending, which then forced them to increase their debt load, which then forced the banks to lend them more money, which then forced Ed to have to take Wachovia stock in exchange for bullion.
Okay, so...
Now, how do you get there? Now, listen, now, what did he say? Listen to what he had to say.
Hey, Ion, I think he's going to point out that it's not a financial crisis. It's obviously something different, and the difference is it's immoral greed that caused this thing. He's going to shift it. He's going to say it's greed because the statistics don't match.
Right, and then government's going to have to legislate morality, and then I'll be really in trouble.
What he's going to say later is that he has a moral book, a moral compass at Wells Fargo, and they go by their little book, and they didn't fall into the same pitfalls as Wachovia and other banks did.
Well, they ended up with all Wachovia's troubles, so they should have read their little book a little closer.
I know, that part I didn't understand, but I figured he's a chairman of Wells Fargo. He must know what he's talking about.
Well, they kicked him out.
kicked him out. Are you kidding? He was smiling as he went out the door, and he says, no, slaves have to be sold. You can't fire me.
Slaves have to be sold. You can't fire me.
Right, you can't fire
me. So he was sold. He was a slave and he was sold. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, to get out of it. That's exactly right.